Welcome to Gold Soul, where empowered parenthood and conscious living meet. I'm Jessie, a licensed home birth midwife, here to explore birth, parenting, and personal growth. Through real stories, reflections, and chats with holistic experts, we'll uncover fresh insights, heartfelt support, and a bit of humor. Let's laugh, learn, and grow together through the beauty and challenges life brings.
Hello. Thank you so much for everyone listening and watching. I've been so excited for this episode. Today, I have my dear friend, Jen, who's also a past client of mine, and she is such a wealth of knowledge in very unique topics. So Jen is a doula herself, a childbirth educator. She is a VBAC home birthing mama. And she has a really unique story that she is here to share with us. So thanks so much, Jen, for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited. So to first start, do you want to kind of share your story about becoming a doula and then how your work kind of played into your influence to have a second baby and having a home birth?
Totally. So I got into doula work after being miserable in my career in Homeland Security. I was on a healing journey at the time, and still am. We all are, right? For a long time. And so I realized that I did not feel in alignment with my career path anymore, and that I wanted to make a transition. I wanted to do something that felt more in alignment for myself. And at the time, I was very deep in healing the birth of my son, who's now 13 years old. I had a undesired cesarean, which many of them are. And within that experience, I was married to my ex-husband, and it left a lot of trauma for me. And so as I was working through the various layers of it, and trying to find my calling and what I wanted to do next, and knowing I wanted to get into healing work in some way, my mentor at the time had brought up doula work. And so I was like, I like it. And so I just literally signed up the next day for my first training, found an agency here locally that were looking for doulas, and I began my journey into birth work and, postpartum as well. And, the transition into doula work, I did want another child eventually, and the desire for this, you know, healing, redemptive birth experience was very deep within me. And learned a lot in my early years being a doula. Was able to support people in hospital settings, you know, at home, in birth centers. And I knew for me personally that when the time came that I was going to hire my midwife, who is you, and who I didn't know was going to be you at the time. But that was kind of my dream and my vision and something that I held very deep within me. And so, you know, witnessing so many amazing women, birth in their own way, you know, seeing the realities of the maternal care system and, our health system and all of that, really, even though I knew that from my own experience, that we had a long way to go, you know, witnessing it time and time again was, could be difficult at times, still is. I turned 40 back in 2022 and still had not met my person and felt my biological clock ticking, knowing from the time my son was about 4 years old, I knew I wanted another one. And so I just decided one day that I was going to do it solo, and I was going to go the sperm donation route. I knew that I wanted to do it right. And so for me, that meant looking into perspectives of the children born via donor conception. And I quickly found my way into this world of options. And there were options from using a sperm bank, where you will not know the identity of the donor. Your child does not have the ability to know about the donor until they're at least 18 in some situations, and in other situations, the donor remains anonymous forever. Still very, at that time, very limited understanding of the fertility industry. And as I began to explore this option and explore some of these donor-conceived perspectives, something just didn't sit right with me with going through a sperm bank. I had come across lots of different experiences and stories of donor-conceived people, and what stood out was that they like the overarching reality for them is to use a known donor, right? So a known donor is essentially somebody that is known to the family, to the woman, to and you get to meet them, you get to connect, you get to have a much more intimate experience. I guess it did turn out to be intimate, but regardless, it's a not a very well-known option, right? Now, a lot of times people will use known donors such as like a family friend or somebody that's known to the couple or to the mother. And come to find out, there is an entire world of known sperm donors. Some of them operating very ethically, rooted in helping other, couples, families. Lots of, within this community, there's lots of LGBTQ families and single moms by choice, and perhaps some couples who are dealing with infertility. And so there are these Facebook groups that are filled with men who are desiring to donate their sperm. And found my way into one of these groups and quickly was reached out to by a few of them. Some of them gave me very creepy vibes. Some of them, I wasn't so sure about. And so I was contacted by somebody who had claimed that he was the admin of one of these groups. And to me, that kind of felt like, okay, so this guy kind of knows what he's doing. Maybe he'll show me the ropes, guide me in this process so I know what to expect, what to watch out for. And so I essentially opened up the door to, form a connection with him. At the time, I wanted to wait a good, 6 months, kind of feel my way through things. I did have my age weighing on me a bit, but as I began to speak with this person, his name is Kyle, it felt like maybe he would be a good donor option for me. He at the time I had was being very honest and open, and I explained to him, in the grand scheme of things, I am looking for a partner. And he very much latched on to that and fed that idea in me that, oh, well, maybe there could be something more than just donating sperm. And I entertained that idea. It felt comfortable to me more than just, some cold connection with somebody. And at the very least, I thought, we would be friends. Right. My daughter, my child at the time, I didn't know I was having a girl, would know who her biological father is, which was very important to me, knowing that that can have a huge impact on lessening any trauma from being donor conceived. So that felt good to me. He was based out of Santa Monica. He had multiple successes. And so he felt like this might be a good match. I don't know if you can hear my little one in
She's all
the
right.
background. She cried. She's here. I just, I stepped full force in. I explored the connection between Kyle and I, and I just decided to go for it. Again, he seemed like he was, healthy. He seemed like he was very open to his lifestyle choices. I used him as my donor. Now, as I was exploring this option, I came to find out that there are different methods within the known donor world of insemination. There is natural insemination, which is essentially sex. There is artificial insemination, right? So that's NI and then AI. And then you can also, which is, artificial insemination is essentially using, not a turkey baster, but some type of insemination tool, a cup. You can use little like cups, put the sperm in, stick it up in the vag, and little swimmers, make their way into the uterus. I figured, I've had a one night stand before, no big deal. Let's just do it, right? Let's just do it. So we did it. And I found out I was pregnant like 8 days later. Now, the guy turned out to be a complete creep. He apparently has almost 100 kids, probably more, because they're not, he probably doesn't keep track of them all. He has since been on 90 Day Fiance. He's been mentioned in a couple documentaries. And as I began to wake up to the fact of what a creep this guy was, because that relationship never materialized that we were supposedly exploring, and that's not the reason he was a creep. I was again totally fine with just being friends. As I began to explore this, I came to find out that there is a lot of bad things happening in these groups. Sexual assaults, people, when you if you don't have a genetic test done, right, there can be certain genetics passed on, right? There's a lot of different things that you don't necessarily, you're not conscious of. You don't think of these things going into it. For me personally, it was, I would have never thought that some of the motivations behind some of these donors existed, right? Some of them have created kind of cults, right? Lots of weird stuff. And so I have been become, I guess you could say, a donor conceived advocate. I connected with a lot of people within that community, shared my experience. Come to find out, these guys are called serial donors. And essentially, their desire is to spread their seed far and wide. So just a little bit about that craziness. I was ecstatic about my pregnancy, so happy, couldn't have been happier. Just, had a little of this weirdness going on at the same time. Jessie here was the most amazing support person throughout my pregnancy. I could not have made it through without her. And, it was a lot to work through. It was a lot to be with. And yet I was able to focus on the joy of, my daughter's arrival. So going into my birth, I had had a previous cesarean, so I was trying for a VBAC at home, unmedicated. And I really, although I believed in myself wholeheartedly, I wouldn't have taken the steps in order to get there. I really didn't know if it was going to happen. And so I kept a very open, clean slate with myself, like gave myself grace. No matter how it unfolds, I'm going to make sure that it's a positive experience and that, I feel as good about it as I possibly can about my decisions and my actions and all of the inner work that I had done in order to prepare to be a single mom once again. I couldn't have asked for a better birth. I really couldn't have. Textbook. I felt it was very textbook. All of the practices and all of the work and all of the beautiful births that I had witnessed definitely were instrumental in my ability to move through it and birth my daughter at home, unmedicated, without the need for any medical intervention. I remember like days, weeks afterwards, like I would think about certain points in my labor and I would get like the chills, like almost like a PTSD response. And yet every time that I felt that, there was this overarching like, but I did it. But I did it. And I did it. And it felt so good. And all of that pain that I felt with my first emotional pain, right, trauma, all that baggage, it's like it, although I had moments to grieve that loss of not having that with my son, there was it's like it just melted away. It really just melted away for me. And I don't think that, with all the, work that I had done around healing that birth experience with my son, I don't think I could have quite reached that level of healing that I was able to by surrendering and letting go and just doing it.
It was such an amazing birth. And I mean, your story, Jen, is like one of my favorite stories because there's so much to unpack with it, right? So, kind of going backwards a little bit, when you had stumbled across the world of known donors and you found this Facebook group, what was your initial feeling and reaction? Was it you're so excited? Were you nervous? I'm so curious what that felt like because making that decision of, okay, I'm doing this. This is I want this baby so badly, and I'm going to go into this without a partner, and then exploring the different options of sperm donors, and then finding this world of, known donors as you described. I can only imagine what that felt like.
Oh, I was ecstatic. I was so excited. I was so excited. Throughout the whole process, I was just very excited because it's something that I had been holding, for so long. And for many years, I had thought that what was most important to me was like finding that relationship and then, you know, having another child. And what I realized was that the deepest desire I had was to bring my daughter into this world, that was that deeper desire. And I gave into it and I allowed it to guide me for so many years. And she's here.
Right.
You know, of course, there was a lot of nervousness and, you know, I guess you could say unsureness, but I was so deeply rooted in that desire and that excitement was so strong that it kind of, you know, it's kind of like you have a whole bunch of doors and it's like you open one door, nothing there, open up another door, and then all of a sudden you open one door and it's like it's there
It's
and
the
you
door.
know that it can happen and it's the door and you're like, wow, this can really happen. I don't have to wait anymore. I don't have to do manifestation, right? None of this stuff. I'm like, this can happen. I can do it. And I can do it without, you know, all I need is that willing participant. And there are so many of them.
So how big
Go
was
ahead.
this Facebook group?
Oh my. So there are many of them. There are many of them, and there is actually what has been termed like sperm kings, right? And they run these groups. So there's like an empire, right? There's this main group called Sperm Donation World, I think, or Sperm World Donation, or something like that. And then he has branches, right? He has Sperm Donation USA and Sperm Donation UK, right? And then there are other very large groups where they have these like turf wars, essentially, and and they're all trying to, you know, throw the other one under the bus, and don't use this one, and don't use that one, and. And come to find out, some of these donors have 1,000, 2,000 children. They will ship sperm, and really, it's just some yogurt, watered down yogurt, and they get money. So there's lots of scams.
That's so mind-blowing to me. I mean, obviously, just th there, I'm sure there's just as vulnerable groups in the world, but that has got to be one of the most vulnerable group of people where you've got families or you've got single women that all they want in life is the miracle of a baby. And that is just such a sick minded individual to manipulate, to monetize. Like, that is just so wild. So legally, what does that look like? I mean, because I don't, obviously, it's so insanely immoral and unethical, but I mean, for those purposes, right? To become this sperm king or, you know, whatever, to have 1,000 children, you know, that you've donated for. Because I think fathering is such an incorrect term because they're not fathering, right? But legally speaking, are there normally contracts involved? What does that look like legally? And then for women that are victimized in this situation, what do they do? Are there any resources for them?
Unfortunately, there aren't, unless there has been a crime that took place, and even then it's I would say it would be very difficult unless it's very black and white. If the act is consensual, it's technically legal. As far as contracts, some states, it goes state by state here in the United States. So, some states will honor a contract, some states will not. If it's done through natural insemination, aka sex, that person is technically the father and can be held liable for child support and everything. They could technically have rights, if they pursue it. the sperm kings, the ones in charge in these groups, have certain practices and guidelines that they abide by to protect themselves, but unfortunately do not protect the recipient parents or recipient families. So the recipients are essentially... one of the guidelines or one of the practices would be don't get genetic tests done. Everybody's got something on their genetic test. So that's one. It opens you up to things, right? The other one is don't sign a contract because then they have your legal name and then they can come after you for child support. Natural insemination is higher odds. So it's essentially coercion into sex. Again, legally, it would be considered rape. But the potential of law enforcement actually pursuing this is negligent. And that's coming from my own personal experience. And secondly, the amount of shame that these recipient parents end up often carrying when they begin to realize how they were exploited and manipulated and taken advantage of is very high, and they do not want to get themselves involved that way. They're afraid of repercussions from the donors. Donors will often threaten to take steps towards custody or legal rights if certain things are pursued by the recipient parents. So there's a lot of gray areas. There's a lot of dishonesty and room for improvement as far as, you know, because I do feel that if done properly, that this is a great option for people. And I've met some known donors, you know, within that community that operate with high levels of integrity and they do things the right way and they have good practices. But unfortunately, those are not the ones in charge of this world or in the sperm world and these groups. So they are often pushed out and removed from some of the bigger groups. Anybody speaks out, deleted, blocked, can't do anything. There is worldwide, there was actually a, Dutch man, Dutch, I believe, from the Netherlands, who there was a recent court ruling that, and he had, I think, around at least 600 for sure, but they think closer probably to 2,000 children. He donated to any sperm bank he possibly could. So not only was he, did he have offspring through sperm banks, but he was also privately donating as well. So they were able to, in Dutch court, get some type of injunction placed where if he were to donate sperm again, he would pay like 100K or some very high number. Last I heard, he was in Kenya, donating sperm, I am sure. So
it's so wild. So are these people that are running these groups, I mean, what is the point? Like, are they collecting money? And if they are, how is that not human trafficking?
From what I know, right, is that I know my donor, I was told by him that other donors will pay him to, so he will send referrals their way, essentially. So I know that that is a way that he makes a little bit of extra cash. Other donors will ship their sperm. So they'll get a little bit extra money in shipping. Some will charge. Some groups are, nope, you can't charge in this group. If you get in this chart, you know, if you charge, you're gonna get kicked out, different things like that. But the motivation is primarily not financial. The motivation is something much more deeply sick and sinister. Power, control.
So when these families are fielding or, you know, weeding out their options and they come to this, and I totally hear that the vulnerability and excitement of what you vision for the future of your future child to look like in potential relationships with the donor, with the biological parent, can definitely blur other judgmental calls, right? But seeing that, so for example, that one person who had potentially up to 2,000 children that they have are, you know, genetically responsible for, in my mind, that is a huge risk as well. 'Cause, you know, I did prior to meeting you, I had seen right before we had met and had our consultation process, I had seen the documentary Our Father, and that blew my mind, right? Like, oh my goodness, like you've got this doctor doing this in a small area, right? Where now, and he's like getting all of his children together that are all siblings, but they all live in a small area and they live with the potential of connecting with a sibling and getting married and, you know, then potentially having children with them, such a concern when you've got so many. I mean, obviously the more international they go, the least likely it is, I'm sure. But as a parent that's navigating this, is that a concern? Do you see that in these boards where they're like questioning these things, and is there any way to be responsible? How do the ones that are responsible avoid that?
Huge concern. Huge concern whether it's known donors or sperm banks, right? The fertility industry is unregulated. It is profit driven. There are a lot of things like Our Father, right? There have been laws passed now, right? Specific to those types of situations. But prior to that, there were not any laws in place. There weren't any regulations in place. As far as the amount of donor conceived children that, let's say, a donor could have, there are no laws nor regulations around that. There are guidelines, and it is based on the area, right? And how many are, I guess, created within that area. And I believe it's about 25 per metro area. But the, you know, there needs to be a lot more done in order to protect these children, specifically, as well as these recipient parents, whether it's coming from the fertility industry or known donors in this whole sperm donation world. I was just one of the women that I am close with now. She's a donor conceived advocate. She's a comedian. She's like a big TikToker. And she had just put out a video about a week ago about a woman that had reached out to her who knew she was donor conceived from the time she could remember, got married, had two kids. Her and her husband decided to do genetic tests. Come to find out, they were half siblings. His father was a donor and did not tell his family.
Wow.
And there have been other people that have come out and told their stories that are very similar to this, where they have essentially been intimate with their half siblings. So it's definitely a huge concern. It's reality. And not only in the case of incest, but you also have, if there are genetic disorders that are being passed down, it's not so much the next generation, but it's the next and it's the next, where you have these large numbers, and there's actually studies that show children, or even adults, adolescents, adults who are related to another person, that there is this natural attraction to that other person because they kind of look the same, right? So it's a huge concern, and it's very scary. And it's something that these, donor conceived children have to live with and be aware of. And unfortunately, this is, part of the trauma is that these children are not told, right? They find out about it when they're 18, or they do their own test. And so, there's a lot of work that has to be done for sure.
So, what do you recommend someone who is wanting to go down the path of utilizing a donor? What are your top recommendations?
Top recommendation would be to explore donor conceived perspectives for sure. I would still say recommend using a known donor. Going through a fertility or a sperm bank can a lot give you some extra protection. So you can choose a donor, you can go to a sperm bank, you can go through the process, right, of the testing, and you can do IUI, right? Of course, that costs money. And not everybody has that kind of money. Not only the money, but maybe it doesn't take the first time. Maybe it doesn't take the second time, right? So it really adds up. And so this kind of going off the grid option is it may be the only option that people have to be able to, have a child and conceive. So number one, do your homework. Interview lots of different donors, go around asking about these different donors, find out how many children they have, get genetic tests done, get STDs done, do artificial insemination, talk to a lawyer, get a contract drawn up. Those are the main ones to really follow. Don't rush into it. For
What
sure.
are your biggest red flags that you would advise to someone who's done their homework and they found the person that they think is going to be the donor and they're so excited that they may be, kind of overseeing a couple red flags because they're just so excited? What are the big blaring red flags for someone like you who's been in this position taken advantage of that you would tell someone to really not look past?
How many kids do they have? How many donor conceived children do they have? That's number one. If it's over 10, to me, that's kind of a high number. That's definitely a huge red flag. The second one would be, how do they interact with you? Right? Are they interested in learning about you? You're the one that's going to be bringing this child into this world. Right? That's a huge one. Some of the, more ethical donors that I've talked to, like, they have their own process of also choosing recipient parents. They're not just going to choose anybody, because they're responsible about it. They're just taking responsibility for bringing life into this world in their own way. They may not choose to father, but they're still being responsible about it. A good donor is essentially going to come to you. They're going to have their genetic test already done. They're going to do a recent STD test. Some STDs don't show up for 6 months. So how often are they donating, right? Where are they donating? You really want to know everything about that person. Google them. That's a big one, for sure. And then, yeah, just kind of asking around. But the red flags, another big red flag would be asking for money. They shouldn't be asking for money unless it's just travel expenses, to get from point A to point B. Overly eager. Bringing up natural insemination, saying that natural insemination has higher success rates. That's just not true. So those are the big ones.
All right. So as you navigated this, and these truths came to light in your pregnancy, in this moment of your life, in this journey that you have wanted for so long, that's gut-wrenching. I mean, pregnancy in general, we're vulnerable, we're emotional, right? As your midwife, it really impressed me at how at every visit, there was something new to catch up on. There were, new findings and new pr more progress in the unfolding of the Kyle situation. And the way that I saw you navigate it was really mind-blowing. And it was like one of these things of, okay, is she processing it? Is she numb? Is she really this like calm, cool, and collected and not letting it affect you? And it was kind of that teetering place. And, I was always like, all right, how are you doing though? What, we talked a lot about what are you doing? What are your tools? Right. But it all this to say, it impressed me so much that you seem to have really compartmentalized as you were navigating this. That's my perception, right? That's me looking into what you were experiencing and how you were handling it. For you, how did it feel?
I have a large capacity. So, for nuance and discomfort. So I brought that into this experience. But in the initial stages, when I first found out I was pregnant, and then almost immediately after, realized that the person that I had trusted within this, and the dreams that I had had going this route and the choice I made, and that literally just falling apart within a matter of days, I questioned everything. I questioned my choices. I questioned who I was. I questioned, should I be doing this? Is this fair? Right? Is this fair to bring this child into this world under these circumstances? I had found out around that in the early stages too that the Kyle had a very serious recessive genetic disorder, and that was weighing heavy on my mind. But a lot of it was, this birthing and bringing this child into this world that would have to carry this in a way. I wondered, was it fair? And so that was heavy and that was hard. And I moved through it. I have very strong internal practices, and I'm constantly processing and I'm constantly moving through things. And yes, sometimes I get stuck, and sometimes I don't have the ability to compartmentalize, but for me, I wanted to be at peace so deeply. I wanted to experience this deep peace, and that was my driving force. And so as I continued to release and move through and move forward, I don't even think about him at all anymore.
It was just amazing to watch you through every prenatal visit, so casually say, tell me the new news. And I'm like jaw on the floor, like, you found out what? And, just like, oh my gosh, this is huge. And you're always so calm and collected, navigating that, navigating a single parenthood of a preteen, then navigating birth work professionally as a single parent. Like that in itself, Jen, is insane. So for all the birth workers that are watching this in partnership, they know how hard that is alone, but you did it alone, like literally alone, you know, and then preparing for a home VBAC. Like, I'm in awe of you.
That was years of preparation.
Right. No, I know. But again, as like, you're like, oh shit, oh shoot, we're here now. Like, this is the moment. Like, there is no turning back. This is what we're moving towards, you know? I'm just so impressed with you. And you're amazing. You're so amazing. And it was so amazing to be on that journey with you and to be like, look at this woman, look at everything mm-hmm. she's carrying. And she's so collected and she's so calm and she's so confident. And that was the coolest part, you know, mm-hmm. being with you as we got closer to your due window was just how confident you were in it. And it was really rad to watch. So talking about preparation for a VBAC, especially one, you know, at home, because there's a lot of yep. providers that don't support VBAC in general, but there's a lot of yep. community providers as well that will not support a home VBAC. You knew that going into it as, you know, a community birth worker here in Southern California. You knew, you know, your resources. What did you feel to be the most beneficial in preparation for your home VBAC?
Learning how to sit with difficult sensations. To just be with them. To just be with them. Not needing to fix it. Mm. Not needing to make it go away. Just being with it. Acknowledging it, feeling it. Right? And just choosing to be with it.
That's everything, yeah.
Yes. And lots of, you know, visualization. I before you came, and when I was with Emily, my doula, I remember telling her, you know, so obviously I was a little bit earlier stages, but I remember saying, I keep having this vision of like all of the women that I supported, like around me, and they're all just like, you know, like chanting and just like in it with me. And it felt so like safe and just like the sacred space of, you know, those who have come before. We've been giving birth since the beginning of time. So.
Right. And I'm sure you get asked this question a lot, as I do as well. When someone's preparing for a VBAC, they want such a list of like, okay, so what can I do to prepare for a VBAC? They want to know yeah. about, you know, they want tactical things to do. And I feel in my experience at that moment, they need to lean more into trusting the unknown. And even, you know, with anyone preparing for a birth in general, whether it be a home birth or a hospital birth or a birth center birth, rather than focusing on all the tools and the right breathing technique and, you know, making sure yep. my partner knows how to squeeze my hips, you know, and knowing all the different positions to take. And yes, those things can all be so helpful for comfort measures, 100%. Yeah. But I feel like the work that we do in our heart and in our minds and really trusting the process and trusting our body and surrendering to that unknown and sitting totally. With those things, like you mentioned, sitting with those uncomfortable feelings, those uncomfortable thoughts, those fears, allowing them to be present and acknowledge them, say, I see you. Okay. Now let's work through it and let's let go of it and let's move into that place. Because just as you experience when we're going through transition, you're at that moment where you're like, oh, this is real. I don't want to do this. Let's go the other way. But there's only one way out and it's through. And every midwife talks about that, you know, and I think that it's so helpful for other moms planning a VBAC to hear that, like from a VBAC mom herself, you know, let go of it. Let go. You don't need to worry about all the tacticals. You know, you don't have to have the right tools. It's what you let go of internally, I think, is yep. the most impactful.
And choosing the right care provider and having the right support system.
Right. I mean, that was like walking into your birth was so epic because we just felt the overwhelm of love and support for you. And it was like so palpable, you know, it was so thick. And you were just doing your thing and you had, you know, your music going and you had that awesome light thing, which I ended up buying. It's in my community room because so Jen had this, it's like a light show, like a little thing you plug in.
Galaxy
Yes,
lights.
thank you. And it just projected. And I've seen that before, but yours like had the moon and it was like, this is so cool. And it's like a Bluetooth speaker too. It was just so epic. But the vibe at your birth was so beautiful. And the again, the confidence that you had in prenatally really just showed because when we walked in, you just rocked it and you did really well in just leaning into yourself and knowing that you had your people there and we were all there to love and support and help, however, but I think that's all you needed. You know, there were moments where you wanted the more hands-on support, but for the most of it, you were like rocking it by yourself, just as mammals we do. And it was so epic. So I don't know if you want to go into detail on the timeline of your birth story and talk a bit about how that felt, and then especially the end, because that I feel like the end was so exciting for you or for me for your birth. When you were pushing and when she came out, and there's that photo that I have on my wall, and I think you have it on some marketing materials. Yeah, there it is, right there. It is my one of my favorite birth photos of all time, of her little face and you taking that breath. Like it is, I relive that moment every time. Like I get emotional. It was like, it was such, it's like a midwife's dream, especially for us that support VBACs, because again, your story is so unique. Not only are you a VBAC, but you're a birth worker. So as we know, birth workers, we have a lot of experience. We've seen a lot of things. So sometimes we can be our own worst enemy, right? When it comes to our own birth experiences, because we know too much. We can get in our own way a little too much, right? So that, and then, you know, the sperm donor and the single parenthood, like all of it, it's like it all, this moment of her being born was like, oh my God. It was just so emotional for me. Anyway, yeah, I would love to hear your reflection on the timeline of your birth story.
Yeah, definitely. So I love telling this story. It never gets old. I remember waking up on a Saturday. I was 40 days or 40 weeks, 5 days. And something felt different. It just felt different. And I had, you know, maybe a little bit of cramping. I started to have some little baby waves, and I was getting really excited because I knew it was going to be happening. But I wasn't trying not to get into my head because I remembered my son's birth. So I just want to share that making sure that you work through your first birth experience is numero uno before you prepare for a VBAC because you have to face some things.
Any traumatic birth,
So,
any
oh,
traumatic
yeah.
birth, you got to work through it. So my first birth was a vaginal birth, but it was very traumatic. And there were elements of it that I hadn't worked through. And I 100% feel like that is what kept me pregnant for an extra long amount of time. For those that know, I was pregnant for a long time with number two. And yeah, working through that first experience is key in surrendering into it. But yes, go ahead.
And so I was just moving through my little baby waves. We went down to the pool. My mom was here. We went down to the pool for a while. Just kind of took it really easy. I let you know that evening that I was starting to have some, you know, some little rumbles. You had said get a good night of sleep, take a Benadryl. I was like, okay. You said have a glass of wine. I didn't have the glass of wine, but I did have some Benadryl. I slept pretty good. They'd wake me up every, you know, half hour, 45 minutes. I just kind of move through it and then go right back to sleep. Woke up the next day, was still kind of about the same, super mild early. early labor textbook. Later on in the day, you had recommended to do the mile circuit. So I knew that once I start doing that, things would start to move a bit. So I'd done a couple hours of the mile circuit. My surges definitely picked up. A little bit more challenging to move through. I had just kind of intuitively known that I would need my doula probably around 10 or 11. So around dinner time, I was like, I'm gonna need you here. I'm gonna need you here around 10 or 11. By that point, I was definitely in some pretty, I had already turned inward, right? I closed my door. I just kind of sat on my birth ball, just did some bouncing, did breathing. For me, moaning was my go-to too. So very guttural, deep moans were very, very helpful to me in order to move through it, to move through the discomfort and the tension and the contraction. And then, I just kind of hung out with my doula for a couple hours. We rested, we got up, we moved around. I shared a few things that I felt might be, that I might have been holding on to. And I remember I started to get this really strong urge to like push, and I didn't understand it because I knew it wasn't time yet. I'm like, what's going on? And that's when Emily, my doula, encouraged me to reach out to you because I was like, I don't want her coming here and it's not time yet. And I feel like that right there is the birth worker thing to do because we all do it. So then, we chatted and I said, I just have this overwhelming urge to push. You're like, okay, I'm coming. But I knew I hadn't had much blood to show yet. It was just, I was like, I don't know. This is weird. It's intense, it's strong, but I'm not so sure of myself. So, you arrived, the photographer arrived, you guys were getting the pool ready. I remember I just could not wait to get into that pool, and it was just taking so
I
much
know.
time. Like, I'm tired of this, I needed something different. I was just tired of it. And so I remember I didn't want to get checked yet. I wanted to wait. So I think I'd labored a bit back in the room, and eventually I was like, okay, I want to get checked. Which I was really happy about. I remember afterward you said, and I was at a six, and you had said, be really excited. Like, this is the f and I was like, I am inside. I was like, I am. I was like happy to be at a six. I was like, it's perfect because you told me that's when you wanted to get there, and I was at a six. I was like, yes, I did it. I managed it, So that was really exciting. I remember this, and then you had checked. I had asked for another check, and I was around 7.5 centimeters. That was a little disheartening, and I knew at that point that I had to kind of move a little bit deeper. So, I remember getting out of the pool. I remember you saying, you need to kind of get up and get moving. And I was like, can I just sit on the birth ball? I did not want to be up because I knew it was like, that was it. And eventually got up. I remember leaning against the counter and just being them just coming one after the other after the other. And I was just like, fuck, 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 fuck. And then in that moment, that was the moment I was like, I don't know. I was like, I don't know. And I pictured myself like if I were to choose, right, another path. And I pictured that, and I had no desire to leave. No desire. And I'm like, I just got to move through it. And it was in that moment that I just fully surrendered. And I was like, okay. I had no desire to go to the hospital. I had no desire to get in the car. And I knew like I was already deep enough in it, like it would be pointless anyways. I'd get there and baby would be there, So, got in the shower, and I remember at that point was when I didn't know, right, that I was kind of laboring down. But looking back, I can say I was definitely laboring down. I just remember like having an opportunity to kind of regroup a bit is the sensation that I had had, like in almost like I could just kind of be with it a little differently. And the whole labor, all I wanted to do was hang. And I was so upset that I had never got one of those like hanging, sling things, because that's all I wanted was to just hang. And so I looked at the bar in my shower and I knew I couldn't hang on it because it would break, So I just kind of put my hands there and I just kind of did a little bit of swaying, and I would just sway back and forth, and it had eased up a bit. And it was very embodied. I wasn't thinking, I was just moving through everything. And at some point, I decided to get out, sit on the toilet, and feel where she was at. And I had done it a couple times during the labor, but I couldn't connect to what I was feeling. And I remember, sticking my fingers up inside of myself, and for a moment I was like, okay, that's where my cervix would be, right? And I was like, oh, but that's not a cervix. I was like, that's her head. And I got really excited. And at the next contraction, I just opened, and all of a sudden she was crowning. And I was like, oh, that's it. I was like, that's it. Oh my gosh. And I was like, guys, I could feel her head. And then I remember you coming in and you being like, so do you want a toilet baby? And I was like, I don't care. Because I really didn't. In that moment, I didn't care. I knew however whatever it was going to happen, it was going to be perfect and beautiful. And you're like, no, let's go to the tub. So I remember just waddling over, and I knew the next contraction, or her head was going to come out. I just knew it. And it's like, what's so funny, just sharing this now, what's so funny is like, most of my births have been, as a birth worker, have been in the hospital setting, right? And it always happens so differently. Some unmedicated births will just kind of unfold the way they're meant to unfold. But usually that time when you're pushing, right, whatever we want to call it, it's just very different what I've seen, right, and what I've experienced and witnessed. And yet, I wasn't thinking about any of that. I was just with it, And so, I knew her head was going to come out. And so got into the pool, felt the next one come in. And I just remember just being with it, and just like find my deep groan space, and got into the deep groan space. And then sure enough, head was out. And I felt her head. And then I remember feeling the sensation of her kind of moving back in, and it was weird. And I was like, I don't understand this. And that's when I had said, I don't understand this. Why does it feel like she's coming back in? And you came over and you were like right there. And I wasn't nervous, I wasn't scared. I was just with it, And then you're like, everything's fine. I was like, okay. Next surge came. And got into that space, just found my deep, low moan groan. And then, literally, she just like shot out of me. It was such a good feeling. It felt so cool. And then she was here.
She torpedoed out of you. I mean, it was a torpedo. Like, it was wild. Me and Melanie have talked about that a few times because, yeah, I came over to you right away because I'm like, yep, we've got a shoulder dystocia. But, we gave you that time and she shot right out. It was so amazing. And again, reflecting, I'm going to have to see if I can add the image to this while in post-production, if that's okay with you. But that image, it just, I get so emotional. It's just the best image because, yes, you went through so many different processes in your labor, from the day prior, spending time with your family at the pool and knowing this is happening. The veil is very, very thin right now, and I'm going to meet her. And then moving through it the way you did, and even that last final rock, oh, is she trying to come back in? No, there's one way out, sister. her shooting out and then you taking that breath and her sweet little delicious face just, I'm here, I'm perfect. I mean, it was just so epic. It was such an epic birth. Thank you so much for sharing that, Jen. And yeah, again, definitely. Like, you are just amazing. I just love you dearly. And it was such an honor to be a part of her story.
You were my rock sister.
That means so much to me. It really does. So what are you up to now? I know that every time I talk to you, you're doing something new. You've got a new offering. So what are you up to now? How can people find you? What's your website, social media? How can people connect? Because you are a wealth of knowledge. Like I said, whether it's, you know, birth work, postpartum work, placenta art and work, you know, a knowledge and reference for those wanting to go down the donor path and or VBAC. So what are you doing?
So what I am transitioning into is I want to hold transformational space for people to move through whatever they need to in order, you know, to become a parent. So, I mean, and I know that's what we do anyways, but where I feel the most passion, the deepest connection is in that healing work. Right? Really getting in touch with what is going on internally, right? What is going on internally? And so I'm starting to host some circles to help people kind of unpack some things that may be keeping them from having that connection to the unknown and leaning into it. And learning how to let go of control, and learning how to be with difficult emotions and difficult sensations, whether that be within the body or whether that be with our toddlers and our children. So really supporting people as they, you know, kind of look into some of those patterns that may be holding them back from being that, you know, not only having that birth experience they want or that postpartum, but also having that connection to their child. Lots of us come with, you know, developmental traumas and mother wounding and all these different things that we carry, and that exploring that and feeling that and recovering from, you know, any stress or trauma that you may be holding in the body, I feel is the greatest gift that anybody can receive. So, still a doula, right? Do birth work, do postpartum work, but where I am really focusing my energy right now is moving into more of that healing space, healing circles, one-to-one prenatal support, pregnancy support, and that.
I love it. That's so amazing and so unique and so needed, right? That's, I mean, as you know, that's why you're here offering it now. I think that's such a gift. Yeah. So how can people find you?
Yeah. So I am on Instagram at the Parenthood Project OC. ParenthoodProjectOC.com is also my website. So feel free to check me out there. Or reach out to Jesse and she can share my contact.
Absolutely. And so are you offering this healing space? I know obviously the circles are probably in person, but for those that are not local to Orange County, are you offering any of these services virtually as well?
I am. Cool. Yeah, I'm actually starting next month. So actually next moon cycle. So my schedule will be new moon, full moon. New moon is about letting go and releasing things that we are ready to let die, as well as setting some new intentions. Full moon is all about, you know, things coming full circle, manifesting, seeing how those intentions have come to fruition. And of course, within that, whatever is arising, right? And then the weeks that we do not have a new moon or a full moon, I'll be doing healing circles, different topics. So things like, again, healing your mother wound, or stress practices for a healthy pregnancy, different things like that. And so I'll be doing them virtually. And you can definitely get in contact with me if you are interested. I'll be promoting them on my Instagram so you can see them there as well.
Awesome. I love it so much. I'm so happy to hear that you're offering this, and this sounds so perfect for you and
I'm
what
excited.
you can provide. Thank you so much,
Pleasure.
Jen, for chatting with me and sharing your
Thanks,
amazing
Jesse.
story. And I love you so
I
dearly.
love you too.
And we'll talk soon. And thanks for everyone for listening and watching, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you for joining me on this journey of growth, connection, and conscious living. If you found value in today's episode, share it with someone you love, and don't forget to subscribe so you never miss a moment. Follow me on Instagram at Gold Soul Midwifery and sign up for the newsletter to stay connected and in the loop. Until next time, stay grounded, keep growing, and remember, your gold soul shines brightest through the beautiful and messy moments of life.